My landscape gardeners incorporated all the essential features, I believe. They spent simply ages getting the rills sufficiently sinuous. I am reliably informed that they contain prospects of rugged grandeur and astonishing natural beauty.
And scorpions, said Rincewind, helping himself to another honey stick.
I don't know about that, said the poet. Scorpions sound unpoetic to me. Wild honey and locusts seem more appropriate, according to the standard poetic instructions, although I've never really developed the taste for insects.
I always understood that the kind of locust people ate in the wildernesses was the fruit of a kind of tree, said Canina. Father always said it was quite tasty.
Not insects, said Creosote.
I don't think so.
The Seraph nodded at Rincewind.
You might as well finish them up then, he said. Nasty, crunchy things. I couldn't see the point.
I don't wish to sound ungrateful, said Canina, over the sound of Rincewind's frantic coughing, but why did you have us brought here?
Good question.
Creosote looked at her blankly for a few seconds as if trying to remember why they were there.
You really are a most attractive young woman, he said. You can't play a dulcimer by any chance?
How many blades has it got? Said Canina.
Pity, said the Seraph. I had one specially imported.
My father taught me to play the harmonica, she volunteered. Creosote's lips moved soundlessly as he tried out the idea.
No good, he said. Doesn't scan. Thanks all the same, though.
He gave her another thoughtful look.
You know, you really are most becoming. Has anyone ever told you your neck is as a tower of ivory?
Never, said Canina.
Pity, said Creosote again.
He rummaged among his cushions and produced a small bell, which he rang. After a while, a tall, saturnine figure appeared from behind the pavilion. He had the look of someone who could think his way through a corkscrew without bending, and a certain something about the eyes which would have made the average rabid rodent tiptoe away, discouraged. That man, you would have said, has got Grand Vizier written all over him. No one can tell him anything about defrauding widows and imprisoning impressionable young men in alleged jewel caves. When it comes to dirty work, he probably wrote the book, or more probably stole it from someone else. He wore a turban with a pointy hat sticking out of it. He had a long, thin moustache. Of course.
Ah, Abrim, said Creosote.
Highness?
My Grand Vizier, said the Seraph.
Thought so, said Rincewind to himself.
These people, why did we have them brought here?
The vizier twirled his moustache, probably foreclosing another dozen mortgages.
The hat, Highness, he said. The hat, if you remember.
Ah, yes, fascinating. Where did we put it?
Hold on, said Rincewind urgently. This hat, it wouldn't be a sort of battered, pointy one with lots of stuff on it. Sort of lace and stuff, and he hesitated. No one's tried to put it on, have they?
It specifically warned us not to, said Creosote. So Abrim got a slave to try it on, of course. He said it gave him a headache.
It also told us that you would shortly be arriving,
said the vizier, bowing slightly at Rincewind,
and therefore I, that is to say, the Seraph, felt that you might be able to tell us more about this wonderful artifact.
There is a tone of voice known as interrogative, and the vizier was using it. A slight edge to his words suggested that if he didn't learn more about the hat very quickly, he had various activities in mind in which further words like red hot and knives would appear. Of course, all grand viziers talk like that all the time. There's probably a school somewhere.
Gosh, I'm glad you found it, said Rincewind. That hat is...
I beg your pardon?
Said Abrim, signalling a couple of lurking guards to step forward.
I missed the bit after the young lady,
he elbowed at Canina,
elbowed you in the ear.
I think, said Canina, politely but firmly, you'd better take us to see it. 5 minutes later, from its resting place on the table in the Seraph's treasury, the hat said,
At last! What kept you?